Hey, you over there. Fuck Montrose. And since we got that out of the way, here's Derek Knight and Colin Burton with this week's installment of the Son of Cheese Half Hour Power Hour.
Woohoo! I am Derek Knight from sonofcheese.com. Thanks, as always, for joining us for today's awesome cast. With me, as per usual, from fizzleandpop.com is Colin Burton. Say hello, Colin.
Hello, everybody.
We have quite a few items to get through for you kids on this week's episode, and I should start with a little bit of information regarding something that I said on last week's episode. Of course, one of the things that I had mentioned was the 180-foot-tall Homer Simpson that was painted in close proximity to the pagan god of boners somewhere in England, and I had made mention that the donut in Homer's hand appeared to be the right size to slip right over the pagan deity's thingy, like a ring toss game at a perverted carnival midway. And I had made mention of this on Monday of last week, because that's when we recorded last week's episode. And the very next day, I go to work, and I see this little animated GIF that I'm sure you've all seen, because it swept the interweb, and you, Colin, you even placed it on the front page of your blog.
Yes, I did.
And it's Homer doing exactly what I said he should, taking that donut and tossing it right on the boner. And now, sure, would I have been the only person to have noticed something like that? Obviously not, but I did want to set the record straight that I had that inkling before I saw the animation. So that wasn't a case of me seeing something and trying to take it and, you know, make a joke. And no, I made the joke, and then unfortunately, before I had a chance to post the podcast, somebody else took it and ran with it, and you know, frankly, did a much better job than I did, because it was visual.
Right, exactly. You could see it happening before your eyes.
That's right.
So to speak.
And, you know, even though it was, like he said, it was rushed, but it was good. I thought it was well done.
It was. And he draws great zombies, too.
Oh, does he? Is that somebody that you're familiar with?
Well, only from that. I decided to, in his little tag at that site... What is it, b3ta.com?
I really don't know. I think forums. I don't know where I saw it originally.
Yeah. Well, anyway, the guy said, check out my zombie book. So I checked it out at lulu.com, and it's really good. I really like the art style.
Oh, is that the book you recently purchased from
Lulu? That is the book that I recently purchased, yes.
Oh, okay. Well, that brings that together nicely, since that was something that you said, I bought a book.
Yeah.
Well, now that it's kind of, you know, goes full circle now. I know why.
Yes. So.
So with all that out of the way, it's now time to delve headlong into Colin Sacco Internet Oddities, news stories which you've personally seen fit to share with me over the course of the previous week.
Indeed.
The first one is a slightly troubling topic, one which I've always been concerned about. It is, of course, whether you are actually eating authentic Mexican food when you choose to go out to your favorite Mexican restaurant. The question is it real or is it Tex-Mex? That's the question that you have to ask yourself. See, it seems that old Mexico wants to make damn sure that the world knows what food is authentic and what is not. Now, you can probably guess what is and what isn't authentic, but we'll get into some detail right before we have the old quesadilla quiz. How's that?
Sounds great to me.
Yeah.
Hey, you want to guess something?
I'm always up for guessing.
You want to guess if I've read that or not?
you read it? You didn't read it even though you sent it to me, did you?
I didn't read it.
Well, guess what? You're going to get it read to you right about now.
Awesome.
Yeah, the AP story that you sent me but didn't read tells us that, worried by the global proliferation of chimichangas, fajitas, margaritas, and fried ice cream, the Mexican government, not just, you know, Mexican restaurateurs, but the Mexican government is recruiting U.S. and Canadian restaurateurs to set the world straight on what is real, no kidding, no fooling Mexican food. Because so proud is Mexico of its cuisine that the government has lobbied UNESCO to declare Mexican food a cultural patrimony of humanity. The government also recently flew in 50 Mexican restaurant owners from the U.S. and Canada to teach them what exactly is authentic and what is not.
Mm-hmm.
Carlos Gonzalez, who is the executive director of the Government's Institute for Mexicans Living Abroad, which is like most of them, I think, he says that Mexican food gives prestige to the country and promotes its image. He also goes on to say something else. Let me see. I can't read this very well. What we want is for those restaurants to promote Mexican culture through their food. Well, it's pretty much what restaurants do. They serve food.
Right.
Officials, however, have their work cut out for them because Mexican food, they say, is often misunderstood. For example, the California-based chain of Chevy's. That's right. You just can't understand it. But the California-based restaurant chain Chevy's, which has locations in 15 U.S. states, including ours, offers classic fresh... Yeah. There used to be actually... Well, there used to be one here in town up on Razorback, but there's still, I believe there's still at least one in Denver.
Ah. Yeah. Okay.
But they offer what they call fresh Mex combos, such as chimichangas, which, of course, is a beef or chicken burrito deep fried to make it extra fatty and good. And also the El Torito chain, which is also based in California, which I don't think we have any here, offers deep fried ice cream on its Authentico menu. So it just gives you the idea that kids in old Mexico have been enjoying deep fried ice cream for years, but apparently that's not the case. The article goes on to say, on a larger scale, Taco Bell's vision of Mexico is something entirely alien south of the border, which, I mean, come on, duh. If you think Taco Bell is representative of what goes on in Mexico, you got your head up your ass.
Oh, come on now. Make a run for the border.
That's right.
The Canadian border. Yeah.
That's exactly, because it's more like Canada than it is Mexico. Apparently, Taco Bell attempted to establish a presence in Mexico City in the 1990s, and consumers were so perplexed by the burritos on the menu that a leading Mexican newspaper had to helpfully include a definition. I believe it just simply said shit wrapped in a flat thing. And a lot of so-called Mexican restaurants simply decorate their walls with bright sombreros and hire a mariachi and think that makes them authentic, says Rosa Maria Barajas, owner of Rosa's Plain Food, not P-L-A-I-N, P-L-A-N-E, Rosa's Plain Food at the airport in Calexico, California. She personally has banned cheddar cheese from her restaurant. She goes on to say, I only use authentic Mexican cheeses like cotija or fresh white cheese, but none of those weird cheeses.
So do you like have the urge to go visit a restaurant with a pocket full of cheddar cheese and like toss it in the air and say, hey, cheese?
Yeah, I'll tell you what, she considers cheddar to be one of those weird cheeses. So
cheddar's not probably, a weird cheese.
Yeah, like Pac-Man Jones makes it rain at a strip club. Sure, go down to Rosa's Plain Food with a pocket full of shredded cheddar and make it rain.
Yeah.
See if
or better yet, you know, when your food gets there, take it out of your pocket and sprinkle it on it. Yeah. Watch your head.
Yeah, that's a quick way to get shot in the face.
It's an airport.
Anyway, Rosa says that she strives to serve traditional Mexican food made with fresh ingredients, including, I'll just rip that off, homemade flour and corn tortillas and beans and rice made from scratch, which sounds just fine to me. I love beans, rice, and tortillas.
How do you make a bean from scratch?
That is a fine idea. We'll have to call Rosa and ask her how she does that. Okay. Anyway, Barajas was among the 50 restaurant owners which the government flew to Mexico City to hear culinary historians lecture on the importance of the nation's food and sample traditional dishes such as grasshoppers and prickly pear jam, all from Oaxaca State in southern Mexico. And I think that's probably where I draw the line. I'm not going to eat no goddamn dirt poor peasant shit food like grasshoppers. Seriously, if that's what you have to eat for dinner, get a job and buy some fucking beans and rice. Seriously. Anyway, the article goes on to say, what's that?
It might be yummy. You don't know.
You're right, and I never will know because I'm not going to eat grass. But the article goes on to say that traditional Mexican cuisine dates back 3,000 years to the Mayans, of all people, who based their diet on corn, beans, and vegetables because they had not yet mastered the taming of the chicken, the most feared of all warrior birds. Most Americans, it says, confuse Tex-Mex specialties such as chili, chimichangas, nachos, and hard-shell tacos, often laden in processed weird cheese and sour cream, with real Mexican food. The same goes for Calmex fusion, such as the burrito, which combines fresh vegetables, fish, and even fruit-based salsas with rice and beans in a flour tortilla. It says that few Mexicans have ever seen or heard of such foods. You see, real Mexicans can't really afford all them highfalutin ingredients. They just eat tortillas, beans, and grasshoppers.
Right.
Anyway, the article continues to say that without a doubt, these foods have helped people in the U.S. and around the world pay attention to Mexico. Those are the words of Fernando Olea, president of the United States Association of Mexican Restaurants, association and owner of... Whoa, that's too many associations. And owner of Bert's La Taqueria and Pachanga Cantina and Restaurant, a traditional Mexican restaurant in New Mexico, and you can tell it's traditionally Mexican because it has way too many fucking names. Anyway, Fernando adds that they want to prevent... that they now want to make sure that they promote Mex-Mex food.
Mex-Mex? Seriously?
Not Tex-Mex, but Mex-Mex. Yeah, really Mexican food. The problem, though, for Mexican restaurateurs is that the American fusions have become too popular to avoid altogether. Ha, ha, ha. Take that, culinary haymaker in the jaw, you backwards fucking country. Anyway, the article continues. Jeanette Avila, who owns the El Rancho restaurant in Southwest Detroit. That's not really that close to Mexico. Anyway, the El Rancho restaurant in Southwest Detroit says, it is important to promote our culture and educate people about real Mexican food, but we also need to be flexible and understand that a lot of people in the United States have yet to develop a taste for our food.
Grasshoppers.
Of course, to keep her customers happy, Avila keeps two menus. One Tex-Mex, which includes the always popular fajitas and margaritas, and a traditional menu that offers a dish of breaded pork feet dressed in egg and topped with ranchera sauce, which I would totally eat. That sounds really good.
Yeah, but so do fajitas. I mean, I don't see any reason why they have to be cast aside.
Well,
embrace it all.
It is gringo food, Colin.
And we're in gringo land.
That's right. We are in gringo country. Anyway, Avila, I don't buy this bullshit, but she says that they sell both menus pretty evenly. Hmm. And that has a lot to do with non-Latinos being more open to try traditional Mexican food, like the pig's feet and the grasshoppers.
So she's saying the Latinos aren't open to try non-traditional food?
Apparently not. Apparently, for a Latino to eat a gringo meal would be sacrilege.
Wow.
Yeah, but I'm one of those gringos that outside of the fucking grasshoppers, I wouldn't mind enjoying truly traditional Mexican fare. And I've never gone to Taco Bell and thought to myself, wow, it's like a trip south of the border. I'm not that completely deluded. I do, though, figure that if I seek out actual Mexicans to cook up some food for me, then there's really nobody to blame but them if it's not all authentico and shit. In fact, I would wager that Rudy's, one of our favorite Mexican restaurants, run by actual real no-kidding Mexicans, outside of their rice, beans, and tortillas, it's just as guilty of gringoizing their food because it's what sells. And, you know, I figure if you want to eat Mexican food, you might, visit Mexico. If you're really that desperate for truly authentic Mexican food.
Right. I've never been.
I was there once when I was like 4 or 5, and my mom was warned to keep a close eye on me because I would fetch quite a bit on the black market, a toe-headed boy like myself.
Yeah, and then you could have grown up with authentic Mexican food.
Yeah, I wouldn't know the difference. I wouldn't be doing this podcast in English either.
You wouldn't be doing it with me either.
That's probably true, but... speaking of Mexican foods, it seems that the fattest man in the world is not an American. How the hell did we let that happen?
It wasn't by my lack of trying, I can tell you that.
Same here. Anyhow, another story which you saw fit to share, including that clever lead-in which I so shamelessly stole from you.
Yeah, you bastard.
Comes at you kids who are listening right the hell now. See, it seems that a Mexican who tips the scales at a whopping 1,234 pounds will be listed as the world's fattest man by the Guinness Book of Records, while a loss of 440 pounds, which he recently achieved, may also make him the man who's lost the most weight. He's like yin and yang. And imagine how unbreakable his record would have been 440 pounds ago. Think about that.
Yeah. Well, I just remember looking at the picture. I feel sorry for the guy. Seriously.
It's hard to discern where the belly ends and the legs begin.
Isn't that such a bizarre thing? You grow fat everywhere but your head.
You know,
it's
well,
like
hey,
a little head on this big, big, big body.
Look at me. I've got a tiny little head and a big sack of fat body. I know exactly how old Manuel Uribe feels.
You're about the size of one of his legs.
You're right. Well, I mean, he's 1,000 pounds, a little less than 1,000 pounds heavier than I am.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, Fat Chops says that he's glad to be in the Guinness Book as the fattest man. He also says that he's happy to have lost 200 kilos. He told that to AFP, which is, a newspaper or something. Of course, he means by that the 200 kilos of cocaine that he's been smuggling slowly across town for the past 15 years, hidden in his flab folds. Uribe was able to leave his home in Monterrey, northern Mexico, in March aboard a trailer to celebrate his weight loss. Mm. And, you know, seriously, that's when you know you've gone too far, when you reach the parade float class of fat ass. Fire up trailer, boys. Manuel's going to hit the town tonight.
Yeah.
That's just, you know, when you have to be loaded on a flatbed to get around town.
I hope I never reach that state.
Yeah, same.
Seriously,
here.
I fuck the record. I don't want it.
Yeah. No. Them Guinness folks, though, they recognized his weighty achievement with a glass plaque. And Manuel says that they gave it to me. I have it in my hands. Uribe founded an organization to help overweight people. Soon after, though, he lost track of the plaque, along with two of the photographers who were on hand to chronicle his achievement. All three were found relatively unharmed, though later on wedged in one of Manuel's copious ass meat cracks.
And this probably reflects badly on me, so I'll go ahead and say it, because I know if I don't, you'll push me to. But when he's the way he said, I had it in my hand or something like that, I immediately thought he has to take their word for it because he can't see his hands.
That's right. Well, he can. It's not that he doesn't have. It's his feet that he can't see, really, because he still has the ability to lift his massive arm at least to an angle where he can spy something.
Maybe.
Although with all that fat pad on his hand, you're right. How would he know if he's holding something?
Yeah, unless it's next to a big statue.
That's true. Manuel Uribe's photograph appears in the 2008 version of the Guinness Book of Records alongside a description of the treatment that he has had and offers of surgery which he has received. Additionally, if you look closely at the photograph, you can see the small bits of matter which have been locked in orbit around Manuel since 1998. Uribe said that the editor of the book had promised to visit him next year and held out the possibility of Uribe appearing in the 2009 edition as the man who has lost the most weight. So, Uribe, well, you know, when you got that much to lose, what's losing a few hundred pounds? Seriously, it's, you know, you take a dump, I think, when you're that big and you lose that much weight.
When you're that big, what you really have to do is pray that they perfect brain transplants.
Uribe appeared on television in 2006 seeking help for his problem of excess weight, which has, of course, plagued him for more than 20 years. Most of those 20 years he has spent in bed dreaming of the day that Richard Simmons learns to speak Spanish.
Oh, my Lord.
Yeah, seriously. So, kids, if you haven't seen the picture of Manuel Uribe, the biggest, fattest Mexican around, look it up, because in the small thumbnail, you'll think, oh, and then you blow up the picture.
Which nicely says, make it larger.
Yeah. As if it could. And then you realize that his right leg, his thigh, is bigger than me. And I'm a significant-sized human being. I mean, it's almost like I am hanging on to the man's thigh with all my might, and he's... You know, obviously he's not dragging anything around, but I could go for a trailer ride, but it's amazing. Just seriously, I mean, $5 to the first guy that tells me exactly how he uses the restroom. Shut up, dog.
Shut up, dog, indeed. Hush. Hush.
That's working really well, Colin. Worf. Hey, that worked. Anyway, keeping with the theme of the fat getting fatter, something which I was unaware of until recently is a product called bacon salt. And apparently it's a seasoning which conveniently makes everything taste like, you guessed it, bacon.
Yeah.
This filet mignon is great. Too bad it doesn't taste more like bacon. Ice cream rules, but it'd be better if it tasted like bacon.
Yeah, bacon salt.
You sent this along to me, and it intrigued me enough to look for it and try it. Outside of that, though, I think unless we were lucky enough to finagle an interview with the Bacon Salt boys, I'm not sure there's really anything more to say about this
stuff. So, did you try it?
Well, no, I haven't even gone to look for it yet. I got set grocery days, Colin, and I'm in between grocery days right now. I'm not just going to run screaming to the store looking for bacon salt.
Yeah, okay.
So, kids, stay tuned for future news, RE the Bacon Salt. I'm going to try and find some at the store the next time I go shopping, and I'm going to see if it's all it's cracked up to be.
Yeah, let me know how that goes.
What made you send that to me, anyway?
You like meat.
Yeah, but I don't want everything to taste like fucking bacon.
There's no law in the bottle that says, oh, once you buy this, you have to put it on every damn thing till it's gone.
Yeah, but that's the idea, is that it makes whatever you put it on taste like bacon.
Add some to mashed potatoes, stuff like that.
I'm thinking of putting it on my bacon.
Okay.
Seeing how that works.
Yeah, because normal bacon isn't nearly salty enough.
No, well, it's certainly not. I want to find out if there's a threshold where bacon overload sets in.
Or, you could put some on your palm and then take a bite of bacon, lick your palm, and compare the flavors.
I might like my palm better than the bacon.
Exactly.
Yeah. Anyway, this next story, by the way, Colin, just freaking astounded me. Just absolutely flabbergasted me. I mean, I know that the role-playing games, they're all the rage, and I know that geeks who play role-playing games are among the most desperate of human beings, but
hey,
there's really no better way to explain what goes on than except to just to read the article. It seems that an armed gang of four kidnapped one of the world's top role-playing gamers after one of the criminals' girlfriend lured the RPG gamer into a fake date using Orkut. Is that how you'd say that?
Orkut? I think it says Orkut. Like
Orkut?
Orkut. That's how I'd say it.
Google social network. Anyway, apparently it's popular in Brazil. Anyway, after sequestering the gamer in Sao Paulo and holding a gun against his head for 5 hours to try to get his fucking password, which they wanted to sell for $8,000.
Yeah.
They didn't get it.
No, they gave up.
After 5 hours, their hostage wasn't talking. The group leader had held the gun against his head the whole time. But the guy wouldn't budge and wouldn't say a word at that point. They just gave up and decided to let him go. And then, of course, the Brazilian police caught up with them and arrested them. The four suspects, age 19 to 27, were pinched.
Yes.
According to police, the story goes that the captive that they took is the world leader in a game called Gunbound, a turn-based RPG-style multiplayer online game, all of which is complete Greek or geek to me. It's developed in South Korea. It's an artillery game where you get more experience points, offensive and defensive capabilities, depending on your skills during battle, as well as money to buy more weapons, armor, blah, 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 blah. You can have multiple avatars, but you can only play with one at any given time, but they all belong to a single account. Apparently, this guy was a
He's the number
world
one
leader.
Player or something. Yeah. Now, here's the thing that I really don't think they thought this through.
Oh, you think so?
Yeah, I think they kind of missed a key point here.
And what would that be?
If they got the password and sold it to somebody, that person should easily be tracked by playing the game with that password, right?
Right.
That's just dumb.
The whole thing was dumb.
I mean, anyway, it was a game like Warcraft where there was parts that they could sell off or something, but...
I don't know how the game works, but apparently it's so popular that these four idiots decided they could make some quick cash if they found the guy, kidnapped him, and stole his username. So their plan was to use one of the other's girlfriends, her name was Tamires, to get the guy on a date using Orkut. And after contacting him and seducing him, it says, she told the gunbound wizard to meet her at a shopping mall. Tamires, of course, never showed up at the mall. Instead, her boyfriend, Igor, did. Gun in hand, he abducted and held the role-playing gamer prisoner and planned to relay the pa- He planned to get the password right there at the mall and relay it to his co-conspirators via cell phone. But against our odds, the hero clammed up and refused to offer the information Igor so desperately craved. And you know, come to think of it, he probably thought the whole thing was a fucking joke when Igor pulled out the gun. Because he totally had a password thief slaying knife. Hey, click 9 against Igor.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Igor and his buddies, they just gave up. Hardened criminals, they ain't, it would seem. Still, as if it didn't seem ludicrous enough for these three idiots to kidnap a guy to steal his goddamn username and password to an online RPG, it's got to be about three times as ludicrous to refuse to give up the info when faced with the barrel of a gun.
Well, you gotta think, if this guy is the lead player, I mean, he is the best at this game, and there's probably thousands of people playing it, I can understand why he wouldn't give it up.
The only thing he cares about is his stupid online rep?
Well, that and the girl he was hoping to get through Orkut, and since she didn't work out to be, you know, there for him, I guess...
Oh, you think he was just so
clinging to what was left of his life, which is that game. I mean... And if he'd given it up, would they have killed him? You know.
Well, you know that you'd have to like you said. Apparently, they didn't think it through because not to say that I would, but if I were at the point of desperation where I were going to take somebody hostage with a gun, if they didn't give me what I needed, yes, you have to kill them. You at least have to shoot them to show them that you mean business.
Yeah.
Shoot him in the leg or something.
No, but I'm saying if he had given up the password, they probably would have killed him, if for no other reason than to make it
And they harder let to track. The word get out?
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, so, yeah, all of a sudden he's playing for shit because obviously the guy who has the password isn't as good as him. Otherwise, he could be doing it himself. But
obviously, though, willing to spend $8,000 to get all the shit.
That's just crazy.
These online
things are just getting out of control, seriously. I bet a dollar
all these
in
kids in their internet show.
I bet a gold coin in World of Warcraft has more buying power than an American dollar these days.
Really?
Well, did you not see that? I didn't send that along to you.
Well, obviously that's why I didn't see it.
We are like, well, you have other ways of finding things, but we're like 3 cents ahead of the Canadian dollar.
Well, I know that the Canadian dollar has made astounding gains in the last just few months.
Right.
Even just a few years ago, the Canadian dollar was down to around 60 cents U.S., and now it's, what, 97 cents?
No, it isn't. Well, 97, I guess it is. But
yeah, it's made astounding gains over the course of the last few years.
Now, the question is it making gains or is the American dollar losing? I mean, we'd have to compare the Canadian dollars to other currencies back in that time.
Right, I don't know.
If it is really gaining or if we are losing ground. I think we're losing.
I don't know the answer to that.
I think we're falling behind.
But easy enough to find out.
Do it.
Maybe some other time.
Okay.
Because we're busy with the Linux Penguin.
Man, we've already been talking for like 33 minutes.
No.
Oh, that's right.
27.
Okay.
Around 27. Okay. Anyway, it seems that this Linux Penguin, the genial little guy who's been sitting on his ass selling a seldom used operating system for a number
seldom
of years,
look at you.
Is getting around. Indeed, there's an ice cream shop called Freeze It, located just north of Studio de Chevalier, where I sit. Okay, it's like an hour north, but it's north. It's located at 100th and Wadsworth in Westminster, Colorado, and they've either blatantly ripped off the Linux Penguin or they just picked the wrong sign company to do their sign because it's got the little penguin sitting next to the word Freeze It, which is done in kind of a bottom arch thing. It's not that complex. Additionally, there's a number of other unauthorized uses of the penguin floating around, showing up on things like scratch lotto tickets and Christmas ornaments. Of course, the question that popped into my mind when I saw all this was a very simple one. Did Larry Ewing, the guy who is credited with designing the Linux logo, the penguin, actually draw it, or did he cop out and pull a random fucking penguin from clip art and not tell Linus Torvalds? This personally to me begs a larger question. Can a company grab clip art and then trademark that as their company's logo? Granted, it's the whole money talks bullshit walks principle. If you have more wherewithal than the next guy, then you can get away with shit like that, kind of like that Todd Goldman prick.
Right.
And I'm not necessarily on the side of Linux here. Even though people are saying, hey, that's the Linux Penguin, they would now have to prove to me at this point that penguin was actually drawn from scratch specifically for their product. Until then, I'll see the stupid little thing as clip art and nothing more.
Well, I will say this. If you could actually prove that was clip art ahead of time, that would be a hell of a scoop right there.
Well, I mean, I'm sitting there thinking, How many times do people get credit for designing something that they didn't fucking do a single thing to?
Yeah.
I mean, seriously, the availability.
Big proof of that.
Exactly. The things that Todd Goldman does, all he has is good lawyers and some money behind him because he steals shit left and right. Now, I'm betting that this guy, Larry Ewing, everybody says, oh, he designed the penguin. I'll bet he fucking didn't design shit.
Okay, I'll bet he found it.
I'll bet he found it on a fucking clip art page and said, hey, there's a penguin for the Linux. And he didn't tell Linus that he didn't personally draw it.
Good luck with that.
Hey, I'll tell you what. If anybody can prove me wrong, do it. I will be pleased to be proved wrong. Because I'm going to try and prove myself right. So if anybody out there
like
can
I
prove
said,
me wrong that this Larry Ewing actually drew the penguin, prove it to me.
Yeah. I wouldn't even know
that's
where to
this
begin.
That's this week's Son of Cheese Half Hour Power Hour Challenge.
Okay.
What do you have nothing to say?
I'm not getting in the middle of this. I will say this.
What are you afraid of? What are you afraid of? Linux users?
No, that's not what I'm afraid of. I'm not going to claim that somebody didn't draw something without any proof that they didn't do it.
Is there proof that he did?
Is there?
What, just because on Wikipedia it says that he drew it? Fuck Wikipedia.
No.
I don't give a fuck.
No.
Wikipedia says.
No.
Or even the Linux website, because, you know, of course he's going to say, well, yeah, I did that.
Until I see proof that he didn't draw it, I'm not going to assume he didn't.
Until I see proof that he did, I'm not going to assume he did.
Well, look at you, Mr. Negative.
Well, look at you, Mr. Glasses Full.
Okay, then.
I don't see... that's just... yeah, I don't even know you.
Yeah, whatever.
Who are you, anyway?
Who in the...
Colin Burton! Thanks.
I don't get to use that often enough.
All right. So...
so what?
I was going to say, if you can prove that, like I said, be prepared for a lot of publicity if you can prove that he didn't do the original.
I mean, ooh, that's the last thing I need is more publicity. Uh-huh. I'm Derek Knight of SonOfCheese.com. You've been listening to the not very publicized Son of Cheese Half Hour Power Hour with the never publicized Colin Burton from FizzlinPop.com.
Have a great week, everyone.
Yes, indeed. Having the great week. We shall see you back again this same time, this same place, next Wednesday.